Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Tana French. Her new book, Broken Harbor, just came out today. She joins us by telephone from New York City. Welcome to the program, Tana.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Tana, I was so excited when I heard that you were coming over for a book tour because you live in, is it Dublin?
Yeah, I'm Dublin.
I was just thrilled because I read your last book. I read Faithful Place, and I thought, wow, I'd love to interview her sometime, and here you are.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Tell us about the series of books. I think it's very interesting how you decide to move on to the next book, how you pick your protagonist.
Well, when I was coming to the end of the first one, I'm wondering, like, what if somebody wants me to write another one someday? I'm more interested in writing about the big turning points, the moments where you know that no matter what you pick now, that's going to define the rest of your life. And the thing about those is most of us get, what, I don't know, two or three in a lifetime? So you can't really, if you're going to keep the same series character, if you're going to write about the same guy, then you can't really keep dropping him into these huge, big turning points every year or two. The poor guy. So the other alternative was to do the more standard series thing, which is follow the one character through the more minor, like, ups and downs of life. And I love reading those series, but I wasn't so interested in writing one. So the only other alternative was to switch narrator. And I like the fact, I like linking them through, taking a supporting character from one to be the narrator of the next, because it means I get to explore the fact that nobody looks the same through their own eyes. Like, the person who gets seen as a supporting character may not be the person he seems like to himself in the next book. Nobody knows everything about another person.
So you get to flesh them out. So we met Mick Scorcher Kennedy in the previous book, or was he in earlier books too?
No, he showed up in Faithful Place, where he was kind of Frank's old friend slash rival slash annoyance, something like that. And there he was kind of presented as pretty pompous, rule-bound little git, basically. But that was because that was what Frank needed to see, the narrator needed to see. He's just found out that his first love was killed 20 years ago. He needs something to fight. And until they find out who the killer was, Scorcher, who's the detective on the case, will do just fine as the enemy. And so Frank sees what he needs to see. But when we come round to this book, to Broken Harbor, Scorcher's being seen through his own eyes. And through his own eyes, he's a lot more intense and a lot more damaged than he came across. And this whole rule-bound thing where he sticks to the rules no matter what, that's not just because he likes following authority. It's because he believes that our minds and our instincts are not reliable things. You can't trust your mind to lead you right. You have to rely on the outside rules because your mind is a tricky, tricky thing.
Well, in Faithful Place, Frank, I'm assuming that one recently came out in paperback, Frank doesn't want to go back to his old stomping grounds where his family lives. He's really estranged from his family, but circumstances force him to go back there. And his family is just a total mess. And now here we are with Mick, and he comes from a pretty messed up family too. What's the deal? Do all police come from these kind? I'm just kidding.
I think the more messed up a character is, the more interesting they are, basically. Uh-huh. Probably because most human beings are damaged in one way or another. It may not be your childhood, but I think if you get over the age of, what, 25 or so, without something seriously damaging happening to you in one way or another, you're a lucky, lucky person. And because we're always trying to find ways to wrangle the damage, to assimilate it, to suppress it, to, you know, people are trying different strategies. Because of that, I think we like reading about people who are doing the same thing, who are trying to confront whatever life has thrown their way and find a way to move past it. We don't like characters who are just completely happy in themselves. That's like watching, like, some guy sitting on his couch eating Doritos and playing the Xbox for 3 hours. I mean, he's having a great time, but it's not very interesting for us. We like watching the damaged ones struggle because that helps us work through our own struggles.
Tana French joins us. Her novel, Broken Harbor, just came out today. Is there a real Broken Harbor, or did you make up this name?
No, I made up Broken Harbor completely, but there are a lot of those ghost estates dotted all over Ireland. They shouldn't be there, but because of this combination of, I guess, over-optimism and corruption and foolishness, there's all these estates that started getting built during the economic boom, and they're half built, they're half inhabited, and then the crash came, and the builders just up and left, leaving these places barely livable or unlivable, and people can't get out of them now. And so the place, the specific place may not be real, but unfortunately there's a lot of it out there.
And Mick, as a boy, his family, they used to go and camp out on the beach there at Broken Harbor, and the development, the estate that you refer to that was built there later was called Bryanstown, and this is really a big part of the story, isn't it? This economic malaise that has created these big empty places.
Yeah, we didn't deal very well with the economic boom. Ireland has always had kind of a fraught relationship with its own history, I suppose, because, you know, we're coming from centuries of colonization, and we're such a young country as well, that we've got this tendency to try and just sweep the past away, pretend it never happened. And so there are things happening all the time, like places like Broken Harbor being renamed as Bryanstown. Oh, the old thing didn't exist anymore. Now we're all up and coming and happening. And that happened a lot during the boom. People trying to just almost astroturf over anything that had been there longer than a few years and just start fresh, and everything's going to be perfect now for evermore. And in some ways that optimism is a wonderful thing and it's needed, but here it wasn't based on any kind of reality. Like, it was, the property bubble was basically a pyramid scheme, and it ran out of suckers, and the crash came down hard on everybody. I think Ireland didn't deal healthily with the economic boom, and before we had even had time to assimilate that, we got hit by the crash. So there is a sense of huge upheaval at the moment, yeah.
A number of years ago, I had Ed McBain on the program, and he told me that, well, he says, when you start a book, he says, the first thing you've got to have is a corpse.
I like that.
We had the trifecta as we open your book.
Yeah.
Do you want to give our readers a little sense of how this opens and where we're headed?
Basically, there's Scorcher, who's one of the top detectives on the murder squad. He is a man who gets his man, and he's got a rookie partner who he's training in. And as the book opens, they find out that there's been a really horrible murder on one of the ghost estates, maybe an hour's drive from Dublin. A young family's been attacked in their home. The father, the two children are dead. The mother is in intensive care. And at first, it looks like they were just casualties of the recession. Like the father, he'd lost his job. The mortgage was in negative equity. He might be going to lose his house. He was losing everything, and he snapped. His mind couldn't take it anymore. But then there start to be things that don't add up. There are holes bashed in the walls with video baby monitors pointed at them. Somebody has deleted files off their computer. The wife thought somebody had been going through the house for months beforehand, and then they find a hide behind the house from which the family was being watched. So it looks like it's not quite as simple as it first seemed.
Now, when you use the term a hide, you mean a place in one of these uninhabited buildings where someone's apparently observing their house.
Yeah, somebody set himself up with kind of like a sniper's hide with a little lair there. He set himself up with a sleeping bag and, you know, a tub full of deodorant and soap and toiletries. He's ready. He's been there. He's been spending his nights there, looking straight down into their kitchen. And that's one of the things that kept surfacing while I was writing the book, was the sense that your home, which is meant to be the ultimate safe place, basically, this is meant to be your fortress against the world, and that for people who are living on these ghost estates, their homes are not safe in any way, either economically or physically. They're built from, you know, cardboard, basically, and the banks own them. And this sense of lack of safety, this sense of always being on the brink of invasion, kept resurfacing. And so that's what this guy is doing, is watching them. They're not safe in their own home.
And Mick really wants to solve the case because he's due. They're giving him another shot.
Yeah, he didn't really come out of the end of Faithful Place the way he would have liked to, particularly. And this is his chance to prove that he is still top man. But there's more than that to it. He feels a real connection to the father of the family, Patrick Spain, the murdered father. He feels like this is a guy who did everything right. He did everything the way he was supposed to. He got the good job. He married his childhood sweetheart. They had two beautiful children. They got the home. He was trying to keep them in the lifestyle they wanted to become accustomed to. This guy was doing everything right. He wanted what he was supposed to want, did what he was supposed to do, and yet the rules turned around and kicked him in the teeth. And Scorcher, who is a guy who plays by the rules and sticks to what he's supposed to do, he really has a hard time with this. To him, it turns the world upside down, the idea that playing by the rules does not give you a happy ending necessarily, and he's determined to find the guy who did this.
Tana French joins us. Her novel, Broken Harbor, just came out. He has a very difficult time, too, with the location because of his own history. And you delve into his own psychological reactions to this location because of his own family past.
Yeah, he does. Hearing about this case on the news sends his younger sister off the rails. She's very fragile mentally. She's not good at holding it together for any length of time. She goes off the rails. She shows up at his house. He's left dealing with her because his family's history is wrapped around Broken Harbor in a very damaging way. And he's left dealing not only with her, but gradually, as the book goes on, with the realization that she may not be the only one in the family who is mentally fragile, that in some ways she's almost the one looking after him, and that does not go well.
Your publicist was kind enough to send along a little written interview excerpt that was done with you about this book, and in the excerpt you refer to writing a psychological autopsy. Now, I was unfamiliar with this term, but that's certainly what you're doing here, isn't it?
Well, I've always been more interested in the psychological effects of crime and the psychological motives for crime more than in the physical gore. I'm not particularly interested in the more grisly kind of gory crimes or crime novels. For me, what's fascinating about mysteries and about murder mysteries is what brings somebody to do, like, the ultimate terrible act. What can bring somebody to this point, and then what does it do to everybody surrounding it, not just to the victims but to their families, to the perpetrators' families, and to the families, to the detectives who have to work on this, and to the people around them, the ripples it sends out. And I think that when you write psychological crime, which is what I do, you do end up doing a psychological autopsy, trying to peel back layer after layer to work out why this happens and what it does.
Well, after reading this book, I certainly had a better understanding of how sometimes the wrong person gets convicted of the crime.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be a detective for the world. What they do is unbelievable. They're stuck in this kind of Mobius strip where you have to have safeguards in place. Like, you have to, for the sake of justice, freedom, and all the rest of it. But every now and then, of course, those safeguards are going to stand between you and getting the person you're after. And so they get caught in this kind of vice grip, and they have to find the right balance that gives you the most truth and justice and all the rest of it. It's not an easy job. I don't know how they do it.
And another intriguing aspect of this is the fact that Mick has been assigned a new partner to investigate this, and he's a young guy, and he kind of comes from the wrong side of the tracks, and their interrelationship and the way that they go through interrogations and all this is really fascinating.
Thanks. I like the idea that Mick has always been the solo flyer. He has partners who he teaches. You know, the way you train a seeing eye dog for him, it is more. It's you're training a skilled professional. This is not your partner, though. Then they move on. But he starts to realize that he and Richie are actually kind of a good balance, because for Mick, you stick with the rules. You follow that completely, follow your head rather than your heart. Richie goes much more on the gut. And the two of them start to realize that they're actually a perfect balance and that they're working together really works. right up until the moment when those two approaches come into direct conflict, and it doesn't end well.
And dealing with Richie, I had to keep thinking about, well, is her next book going to have Richie as the main character, or are we going to go somewhere else? I can't remember the guy's name, but this guy who's a detective who's a complete jackass. what's his name?
Quigley.
Yeah. That guy. I thought, is Quigley going to get the next book? You know, you don't need to talk about that. But that's one thing that was coming into my mind. It's like, okay, where are we going to go next?
Oh, I couldn't have put up with Quigley for 2 years of writing. Ugh, no. I kind of cheated with the chain-linked books because the narrator of the next book is actually a guy from Faithful Place. His name is Stephen, and he's kind of the young, eager, up-and-coming rookie who really is very ambitious and just dying to get into the murder squad. And Frank's daughter, Holly, and Frank Mackey, like a couple of characters from Faithful Place, actually show up again in the next one.
Oh, I remember Stephen. Oh, good.
was fun.
So is that book done?
No, it's kind of halfway done. This time, Stephen's the narrator, and Holly, Frank Mackey's daughter from Faithful Place, is now 16. And in her school, girls' school, they have a notice board up where the girls can post their secrets anonymously on pieces of card or whatever. Things, you know, if you're into some guy or you hate your mother or whatever, you can stick it up there. Except that Holly has found a card that is a photo of a boy who was murdered a year ago on the school grounds, and the caption says, "I know who killed him," and she brings the card in to Stephen.
Oh. Well, can we at least get a novella for Quigley?
Oh, God, I wish I could write shorter books. I have long ideas. I would love to write shorter ones.
Yeah, this one clocks in at, what, 350 pages?
I thought you were going to say 350 pounds. I wouldn't have been one bit surprised.
And how much was it before the edit?
Oh, God. I don't think we shaved off that much. I think we shaved off maybe... Well, I shaved off 10,000 words before I handed it in because, dear God. And then I think they shaved off another 2,000 or 3,000. It was big.
Okay. Tana French joins us. Her new novel is Broken Harbor. It's another Dublin Murder Squad book. Is there such a thing as the Dublin Murder Squad?
No, I made that up. They kind of have one overall bureau that handles all kinds of different cases. But I figured, for In the Woods in particular, you needed that elite, tight-knit, high-pressured feel, you know? There's something about a small group of people who've been handpicked and are working very hard that gives an extra kind of pressure, an extra beat, a speed, a pace to what they're doing. And I've stuck with it for the same reason, because it makes for a tighter environment. I figure I do a lot of research, but I figure you also have to know when to ditch it for the sake of the story. But I do the research because if I get something wrong, I want it to be deliberate because the story requires it. I don't want it to be because I shove my foot in my mouth, you know?
Yeah. If I had to pick a favorite character, it would have to be a very peripheral one because I just love the way he speaks, and that would be their boss. I love the way he talks.
Oh, Kelly, thank you very much. He's been in all of them, I think, more or less. No, not in Faithful Place, but in the others. Yeah, he kind of tracks through getting more and more jaded and world-weary and tired of these idiots he has to put up with.
How do you get the language right for him?
See, I'm coming from an acting background. I was an actor for years. So for me, it's what I do is thinking in terms of other people. You think about what would be fun to play as an actor and take it from there, and it helps you kind of get further and further from your own speech patterns and intonations. That's what I like doing.
Well, I don't know very much about you personally, but it sounds like you've lived a lot of places and you've done a lot of different things. Weren't you born here, but you live in Ireland, and didn't you live in Africa at one point?
Yeah, I was a Vermont baby, but we didn't live there very long. We've also been in Rome, in Florence, in Africa, in Washington, D.C., and Dublin since 1990, so Dublin for, like, more than half my life, and it's home now at this point. As near as any, I don't think you can call anywhere home when you've been such an international brat, but Dublin is more than anywhere else ever will be.
And it was Malawi, was it?
Yeah.
What is that like?
Well, when you're... What was I, 7 when we moved there?
Oh.
You kind of take for granted. You don't think it's weird to have to check under your bed for, like, cobras and spiders the size of your hand, because that's normality, because that's what's there. I loved it. I thought it was an amazing place. place to be a kid. I thought it was just marvelous. But it gives you a kind of different attitude towards the concept of home and towards the concept of belonging. And I think that's where books like Faithful Place in particular came out of, because it's about such a tight-knit community, such a community where everybody's roots together go back generations. If somebody looks at you, they're seeing not just you, but their grandparents' relationship with your grandparents and filtering all your interactions through that. And to me, that was the most exotic thing I could imagine as a kid growing up, because everybody, you know, I was in international schools, everybody moved every year. If you weren't leaving, one of your friends was. And so that idea of knowing the same people, not just all your life, but your parents' lives and your grandparents, to me, that was absolutely enthralling. And that, I think, that concept of home and belonging is where a lot of the stuff in the books comes out of.
Speaking of Faithful Place, which recently came out in paperback, when we get to the end of that book and we find out who did it, I just went, ew.
Good.
Oh, that was really weird.
Good, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved that. That was so creepy.
I'm very glad. It was an interesting book to write. I have to say, that was a lot of fun to write, just because the Dublin sense of humor is huge fun to write. But yeah, the ending to that is very mixed, sad and happy, because in a lot of ways it's a love letter to home, to family, to the place you come from, but it's not a nice love letter. It's a dark, dark one that doesn't get the answer you want, you know?
And we have this incredibly twisted situation where he was ready to elope with his true love, and then it just kind of just blanked out, and no one knew what had happened. And this guy went on and separated from the place and from his family and from all this life, and then suddenly everything comes back.
Well, he thought he had separated anyway. Yeah, on the night when he and his first love were ready to run away to London together, she didn't show up. And he's built his whole identity on the idea that she dumped him because his family is so completely crazy that she didn't want to deal with that. She didn't want to marry into that. And she ran away without him. And his whole identity has been constructed around this assumption. And then he finds out that she never left at all. And for him, that's an upheaval of his normal day-to-day life, because he has to go back to this old neighborhood that he never went back to again, that he has no time for, doesn't even want to see his family. He gets dragged back there to find out what happened to Rosie, his first love. But it also changes the way he sees himself, because he has to readjust everything around the idea that this one assumption was wrong.
And I love the flashbacks in that book, because here the guy has gone on and become a cop, and he's essentially despised by the residents of his former neighborhood because of his profession. Yet if things had gone the way he'd wanted and he and Rosie had run off to London, he wanted to be a roadie for a rock band.
Yeah, this was not the life he had planned for himself. And he's an undercover detective as well. So in a lot of ways, over the course of Faithful Place, he's less and less sure whether he's a cop undercover in his own neighborhood or whether he's a Faithful Place boy undercover in the detective force. He becomes less and less sure which one he is at heart, because everything that made him into a cop, as you say, is disintegrating.
Tana French joins us. Her new book is Broken Harbor. How did you make the transition from acting to writing novels?
But totally by accident. That wasn't meant to happen at all. But I was a theater actor. And unless you're like, you know, Judi Dench or someone, which I wasn't, the gigs don't line up neatly. There's always a few weeks off in between and the rent has to get paid. So I've always been fascinated by archaeology. So I got myself a few weeks' work on an archaeological dig. And I think what turns somebody into a mystery writer is that they're always looking for a potential mystery in everything. I'm out there on this dig one day, you know, eye deep in mud, and there was a wood not far from the dig. And I thought, that would be a great place for kids to play. But instead of stopping there, like a normal human being, I'm looking for the potential mystery in it. And I thought, so what if three kids ran in there to play, and only one came out, and he had no memory of what had happened to the other two. And then what if he became a detective and another case drew him back to this wood? And I scribbled this down on a piece of paper, and I threw it somewhere. I went off to do a show and forgot all about it. And like a year later, I was going through old phone bills, and here's this piece of paper with coffee rings and whatever, and this scribbled idea. And I thought, I really, really want to know what happens in that story. And the only way I could find that out was obviously to write it. I was pretty sure that, I mean, I couldn't write a whole book because I had never tried. I was fairly sure I couldn't do it. But I could write one little piece and then the next little piece and then, whoa, look, we've got a chapter. And all of a sudden, I found myself actually turning down acting work to finish this, which, if you know any actors, they don't do that, you know? And I suddenly realized I was serious about this. It was very strange. It wasn't the plan.
And that became In the Woods.
Yeah, little by little.
And that book got you noticed, apparently. I see this list of recognitions that it received.
Yeah. Again, I think everybody's fascinated by mystery. And especially that idea of there being a mystery within your own mind. I think that interested other people as well as me. I wasn't the only one who wanted to know what that would feel like, to know that you're growing up with the solution to a mystery trapped inside your mind, but you can't put your finger on it. I think everybody knows that, you know, our minds are mysterious places, and that's interesting to people. And because of that, I think In the Woods kind of struck a chord.
Do you read in this genre?
Yeah, I do. I do. I'll read anything.
Anything that knocked you out recently?
Oh, Gillian Flynn, Gone Girl. Anybody who likes mystery, you have to read Gone Girl. This is just psychological mystery at its height. This is one of the scariest portraits of psychopathy and of the way that kind of the underlying evil and manipulation can get so intertwined with normal life that there's no way to disentangle them. It's one of the scariest. It's not violent, but it's one of the scariest portraits of psychopathy in action that I've ever read. And it's very funny as well, which is a good combo.
I guess there's a good reason that it's number one right now.
Is it good?
I think it's number one, yeah.
Oh, so well deserved.
Well, Tana, it's really been a treat to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our guest today has been Tana French. Her new novel is Broken Harbor. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks for listening. It's that time of year. We're reading beach books, and crime fiction makes wonderful reading in the summertime. Next week, we're going to have a real treat for you. In fact, we're going to have a couple of treats coming your way as James Lee Burke revisits the program next week for his new novel, Creole Belle. It's a Dave Robichaux novel. Followed the next week by James Lee Burke's daughter, Allifair Burke, and her new crime fiction novel, Never Tell, in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.